And so I'd always have them sign up, because what do you do? What do you do if a student pops in and says, "Where's my paper?" You see, and you don't have it, and maybe that student never came. So you always had to have them. You learn a lot of things the hard way, you know. Mm-hmm. And I used to then spend my time memorizing students' names. So I would know, I remember, you know, like a class of 125, I could name every student in that class. Not right off, but in time. Mm-hmm. And
did you find a big change in the size of your classes over time?
St. Mary's has been weird that way. You would think, and it didn't work out that way, but, you know, going from 800 to 8,000, then you'd think if the classes got bigger, they would then proportionally get bigger that way. I would describe it more like this, that relatively small. I think, like, for example, my ethics class, that's back when everybody had to take ethics, and there were 800 students. I think I might have 55 in an ethics class, so that's big. You know. But nevertheless, I'd have to think back, but it would look something like this. It wouldn't go from 800 to 8,000. It wouldn't go like that in a uniform manner. It would go something like this, a bit back this way, because I can remember when Art Monahan, for example, let's say midway through my career, so that would be, let's say, I'd have to be very hypothetical on this, but say mid-70s, something like that, maybe a little before, you know, Art would have 250 in his introduction. I remember Bill Dalton, who passed away many years ago, used to be in political science, 250. So, but this is when St. Mary's, you know, was somewhere between the 800 and the 8,000, you know, only about there. And so they got real big, and then I can remember Jerry Gordon, who's who used to run the psychology department and run child psychology thing downtown for many, many years. Jerry was talking in psychology about lecturing in like theater A and B and being in one and using, you know, a photographic system to, you know, and that was years ago. See, so it's weird that way. On the other hand, in philosophy, see, we are the worst student faculty ratio right now, certainly in arts and perhaps in whole school philosophy department is now. The people in logic especially have been overloaded. I'm talking 70, 80, 90 people in a logic class, and that's just hopeless. I mean, they come along in the English class, and they say, oh, you're teaching a, you know, like a skill, and 30 is max or something like that, and here are people with 80, 90, you know. So in that sense, you know, it's bigger. But I wanted to mention about the exam thing. That's another thing that you'd be interested in. When I got here, everybody had to take these final exams. First of all, you took the big, kind of a big exam at Christmas, which was like a quasi final, only was only halfway through the year. Because see, all the courses were 1 year courses then too. Mm-hmm. But that was one of the things I liked about teaching in Canada as opposed to the States. I always like a 1 year course because you get more time to develop it. So that was good. But these exam things, see, and very close friends of mine, like Art Monahan would be one, and I can, I remember Guy Chauvin. The reason I mentioned them is Guy was from Quebec, Art from Ontario, and of course I was from Ohio, you know, the Midwest, different background. But they would be shocked to find out that it would be possible, and it did happen in from time to time, people would fail my final exam and pass my course. And the reason would be they would have done well, say, in the other three tests, maybe if there was paper, you know, or something like that. So their overall, and I also gave some percentage for class performance. See, I never lectured in 30 years. I was unable, I just simply dialogued with students. But with a lot of hard work in advance, I don't mean going to wow the students, you know, you can wow and be Mr. Nice Guy and so on. You're not being Mr. Nice Guy, not when they get out in life. But like an ordered dialogue, like I'd throw out questions to a student and develop, you know, around whatever the particular thing, free will discussion, for example. Well, what about then, and so on. I always tried to make it live in the classroom, and therefore I never could stand up and just lecture. Close I ever came to that would be from time to time, there would be a thought so delicate and refined that I would kind of like read off a paragraph, because if you missed it, then you might, but that was only very occasional. But anyway, we used to have some big arguments over that, and I was equally shocked, and I'd say, Lockhart and Gee, and then the other guys around the time, I'd say, you seriously tell me that you think this is fair and just and honest? I relate on. I say, so a student go through the whole year, they're in class a good bit, and particularly if it's a fairly small class, you know the student, they handle themselves well, they take your other tests, and I'd turn the heat up. Suppose I get 100% on your other tests. You know, that wouldn't happen, but it can, you know, if it do very well, and then do very well on your papers. And they happen to come in, and they happen to fail the final exam, that 1 3-hour endurance contest in May, and they flunk a whole year's course. You know, well, I think that's unjust. And so more and more came in the thought the way I did, and then we got the final exams made optional. I mean, I didn't wish to impose my thing on other people, like you can't have a final exam, and different disciplines work differently too. So, but now what's happened is, I understand since I've left, but of course, faculty like anybody else, faculty are just people, they'll abuse things just like anybody else. And so what happened was, I didn't get final exams, but I would give like a final test, which would be just the final quarter, so 4 quarters each one. And but then some of the abuses were these, that some faculty members apparently would give, like in a final test, of course that's a 50-minute period, would give like a final exam then. Well, of course, that's I can see the student's point of view there. That's not fair. You know, they would do that. Our faculty needs a kick in the ass at times, I can tell you this. You know, I have, when they're wrong, and you know, that kind of stuff. I'm not one who's pro-faculty blindly or pro-student blindly. Each issue has to be decided. That was one. Another thing would be is that they'd do slipshod stuff. For example, give a final test before the final day. Well, if you give it 2 weeks in advance and there's nothing else coming, guess what's going to happen? You know, and that's so they could get out early, you see, not because they cared about students. And so, of course, now I understand that they've got it back to where they're kind of forced to give a final test. I don't agree with that either. But anyway, that's an evolution on final exams there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What change did you see in the faculty that you worked with?
Okay, good question. When I came to St. Mary's in 1965, one of the biggest changes that you see today is the demand to produce papers and to publish. In our faculty, hardly anybody was doing that. Now, at a university level, there should be some of that. Again, I've seen that overdone. But there should be some responsibility to produce some papers and to make an effort toward publication and so on. It varies from field to field. I mean, my field is one of the worst fields in which to publish simply because there are not the journals. Mm-hmm. There are, the rejection rates can be 90-95% rejection rates, whereas another field may have 40-45% rejection rates. See, so there are contingencies there that need to be looked at. But on the other hand, in 1965, I mean, God, they just, I mean, there were a few people doing a little bit of publishing, and that was it, and very few. And so what that meant, it was like a large high school in that respect. You know, when they handed in their finals, boy, it was off to the races until this thing started. Well, that to me is immoral. You know, you're a professional educator. You've got to develop. And then that whole thing, what happened was, very simply, it wasn't pre-planned that it happened. It's just circumstances in society. There became more and more people that were highly qualified, and the competition became greater and greater to get the jobs. The people become better trained, and so on. So, you know, if you've got a job opening and you got, I don't know, 25 to 35, 40 people that are very qualified, you're going to get good people. The good people you find, they've been compelled to meet higher standards. And so that's okay. So it became then more and more excellent in publication. My own view is that I think we need more balance. I think I would take the position the teaching should still be number one. On the other hand, there should be some reasonable requirement for producing papers and publishing. I distinguish the two because you may produce papers and present them at learned societies. That's one thing. And on the other is you may publish papers. And sometimes the ones that you present learned societies will become what you publish, you know, and so on. So it varies. But at least that you should be doing more than just repeating what you've done every year at an undergraduate level in your teaching. That, to me, is unacceptable for a university professor. Mm-hmm. You should be advancing. So the problem, of course, with... one of the reasons it goes toward publication is very simple. It's stuff printed on paper, and you can count the publications. See, it's harder to measure good teaching, but I think it can be done. And incidentally, what I found through the years was this. See, in a smaller school, you get to know a bit about who's doing what, who isn't, who can and who can't, or will and won't. Invariably, what I found was this, that those who don't want student evaluations of those courses, invariably, were the ones that I knew were doing a lousy job of teaching. Mm-hmm. And of course, the reasons will be, who are students to evaluate us? You know, I mean, you know, just like, you know, you're not able to because you don't know enough to do it, you see, and so on. I mean, all kinds of rationalization there and so on, or the tests have been shown to be invalid, and I've listened to the whole litany, and I just think, excuses. You know, you're not doing a good job. You know it. You don't want to look bad. Mm-hmm. Right? So, anyway, go ahead.
How about extracurricular activities? How have they changed St. Mary's over the years?
Extracurricular activities. Well, probably I'm going to have to say I don't know in one sense. Now, obviously, with the building of the tower and with all the very fine athletic things they've got there, as opposed to, you know, lesser opportunities, I suppose, it must have changed. But I didn't, if we're thinking of extracurricular activities, I was thinking in terms of sports and athletics. Now, in terms of the school societies and that, I don't know that I could say. In other words, there's always been, as far as I know, school societies, but I'd never kept up, you know, like that. Our philosophy society kind of goes out of existence for a few years, and then it kind of comes back in, and it seems to subside and go up. And I understand it's up now, you know, but I mean, I have to kind of plead some ignorance to the extracurricular activities because I guess what it was is I found teaching and research like doing two jobs and exhaustion, you know.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm probably not too much help there.
Well, that's pretty much all the areas I wanted to cover, unless you think of any other changes.
Gee, I can't, no. Well, let's see. I really don't. You probably do, and I'll think of three things, but I don't really. Here's a little tidbit of information you'll be interested in. Of course, when I came to St. Mary's, our philosophy department was all male. I mean, of course, there were priests. There were, there was Father Stewart, Father Macho, An old guy was there just 1 year, and like Irish named Mike O'Brien or something like that. He was there 1 year, and then he retired. And there was my Art Rowley, Buzz, Professor Monahan, Professor Marshall, myself. Well, it's very interesting. This year, as of 1993, the philosophy department at St. Mary's will have more females than male. Now, the way it lines up is this. See, Professor Monahan and Marshall, they retired this year. I retired 3 years early, which is good for the department because otherwise all three of us just by chance would have gone this year. And boy, you know, that's hard to hire people on tenure track. It's very serious and an awful lot of work. So what the philosophy department will have will be four full-time men, which would be, Sheldon Wine is the chairperson. and Wayne Grennan, and then Bob Ansell and Peter March. Okay, that's four. But then Sheila Crooks has been there quite a while. Okay. And a gal, June Blair, who replaced me, and they've hired two women. One of them is Susan Wake, and the other is, I heard her name, and I can't remember it right now. Okay, that's four and four. But the part-timers are all women. We've had Sheila Kindred about 20 years, has done part-time, you know, teaches a logic and makes a wonderful contribution. She does two logic sections. And, Oh, did Sheila? Yeah, is that right? Yeah. Now, how big would your section have been?
It was a very large class, probably 60.
Yeah, that's too much. You can't really do it. And
this was 4 years ago.
Right? Yeah. And there's, so that actually the class department now is really, in that sense, more females than males. So that's a big change. But see, we were never like, that's one thing in my department I can say. We've had some very, very strong differences. But I've never, from day one, ever seen anything like anti-female in that. I find that incomprehensible, really. I mean, because everybody's like, the women that are in there have been wonderful. I mean, Sheila Crooks, well, Sheila Kindred was the first, but back in the early 70s, and then Sheila Crooks has been in quite a number of years now, and because they've always made a wonderful contribution to the department. I don't think that we in the department think of them as both female and male. It's just, they're colleagues, and they always have been, and I'm sure that the ones who come in, you know, so it just, I never understood that. Maybe it's because I often wonder why, and I think, you know, your upbringing has a lot to do with it. Now, I went to public schools in Sandusky, Ohio, where you had males and females in the same class. The reason I say that, the Catholic schools split them, you know. And what it was is I grew up around very smart girls. You know, the ones who would be the class leaders would not be male. I mean, we'd have some males, and I was always up, you know, very tough, but there'd be, you know, the females too, right on from grade school through high school. So I often wonder, did that rub off, or just that when you're around people that are bright females, how can you think otherwise? Mm-hmm. You know. So anyway, so our department, in that respect, I must say, has been good. So that's what's on the offing for next year. But I'm groping for other changes. I suppose I can't really think of any offhand. You know that. I've kind of been over the academic, I've been over the department, the curriculum, I think that's about it, I guess.
Everything?
Yeah, sure.
That's great.
Yeah.
You answered.